to squeeze the Libyan government, which again, Libya is a state that is in, you know, a state in name only. If they wanted to try to clean up the prisons, then they could squeeze the Libyan government through the Libyan Coast Guard, since it's entirely funded by the EU, and say, look, if you want more of our assistance, then, you know, you have to immediately open the doors of the detention centers, let observers in, raise the standards, stop the abuses. That's a short-term pragmatic goal. But the deeper goal is there needs to be more funding to slow and more policy to slow the outflow of desperate people from their place of origin.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us, Ian Urbina, investigative journalist, director of the Outlaw Ocean Project. His recent article in the December issue of The New Yorker is titled "The Invisible Wall Inside the Secretive Libyan Prisons That Keep Migrants Out of Europe." We'll link to his project on our website at democracynow.org. And again, if you'd like to join us for our 25th anniversary celebration that we had the other night, you can just go to democracynow.org and see our interviews with Noam Chomsky and Angela Davis, with Winona LaDuc and the National Book Award-winning poet Martina Spada, the performances by Lila Downs and Tom Morello, and appearances by Danny DeVito and Danny Glover and Cornel West. That's at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Stay safe.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO's end-of-the-year drive is happening right now, and we invite you to become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Contribute now through December 31st, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000, thanks to the generous support of the Ronnie S. LaCroute Fund of the Oregon Community Foundation. Join the KBOO family today at kboo.fm/give.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. In 2019, directors Clement and Sophie Guerra produced an award-winning documentary entitled The Condor and the Eagle. The film documents the stories of four well-known indigenous environmental spokespeople who are at the forefront of a perspective shift in the identity of indigenous people, from forgotten voices to powerful and influential leaders. They have struggled with feelings of isolation their entire lives and are now discovering the power of their shared voices to bring change to the entire world. When revered Native elder Casey Camp Hornick traveled to New York in 2014 to lead the People's Climate March, she was met with overwhelming support from the people of her sister nations in North and South America. With the continuous expansion of pipeline projects throughout the Americas, these indigenous women and men represent the last remaining landholders who refuse to sacrifice their territories to transnational oil companies. Their unification in New York first and later in Paris are among many similar and burgeoning initiatives, mostly led by indigenous women, that have inspired people around the world to rise for the protection of the earth and give life to the climate justice movement. Filmed in the jungles of the Ecuadorian and Peruvian Amazon, First Nations communities in Canada and Native tribes in Oklahoma, viewers are able to capture the extraordinary beauty in the places, faces, and cultures of Indigenous people. The Indigenous heartfelt pursuit for self-discovery, self-reclamation, and a way of life is chronicled in this film as they build alliances around the world. The film also sheds light on the role of Indigenous peoples on the front lines of struggles to defend the earth from extractivism and environmental devastation. Today, we bring you audio from a recent panel discussion and question and answer about the condor and the eagle hosted by the Indigenous Environmental Network. The Indigenous Environmental Network is a network of Indigenous grassroots environmental justice activists, primarily based in the United States. During today's program, you will hear presentations delivered by Casey Camp Harnick and Tom Goldtooth. Casey is one of the protagonists in the film, The Condor and the Eagle. She is the hereditary drum keeper of the Women's Scout Dance Society of the Ponca Nation of Oklahoma. Tom Goldtooth is the executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network and has been awarded with recognition of his achievements throughout the past 40 years as an activist for social change and Indigenous-based just transition within the Indigenous and environmental justice movements. The discussion was moderated by Liana Lopez. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities, are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
I'm Max Pringle with these headlines. Pfizer said today that preliminary studies show its vaccine and booster appear to offer protection against the Omicron variant. Mikael Dolsten is chief scientific officer at Pfizer. He told CNN that early results from tests are encouraging, but people need to do their part and get the jab.
Everyone should get vaccinated, and those that have given the two doses should, as soon as possible, get the third dose.
Dolsten said a booster dose of its COVID-19 vaccine appears to offer important protection against the new Omicron variant. Pfizer and its partner BioNTech tested how well vaccine-produced antibodies could neutralize Omicron in lab dishes. They found significant weakening after the standard two doses, but a booster dose increased antibody levels by 25-fold. The company said two doses still may protect against severe illness, but they're working to develop an Omicron-specific vaccine in case it's needed. They announced the findings today in a press release. The data is preliminary and hasn't undergone scientific review. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and his Conservative Party have come under fire over an alleged Christmas party that they were supposed to have happened last year while the rest of the country was in lockdown. The controversy broke after release of a video in which high-ranking Conservative Party members are shown joking about the party. More from FSN's Laura Macon-Isherwood in London.
It's not clear who leaked this video, but what it captures places mounting pressure on the UK government. The Prime Minister's then spokesperson, Allegra Stratton, pictured standing at the podium inside Downing Street's new press room, practicing answering questions from government aides posing as journalists. One asks whether Ms. Stratton recognises reports of a party taking place inside Downing Street. Jokes are made about it being cheese and wine before Ms. Stratton is heard saying there was definitely no social distancing. Opposition Labour Party leader Keir Starmer says it shows the Prime Minister has not been straight, urging him to come clean and apologise. Laura Macon-Isherwood, London.
Olaf Scholz was sworn in today in the German parliament as the country's new chancellor.
I swear that I will dedicate my efforts to the well-being of the German people, promote their welfare, protect them from harm, uphold and defend the basic law.
Scholz heads the center-left Social Democrats. He replaces center-right leader Angela Merkel, who steps away as head of the largest economy in Europe after 16 years in office. Scholz said he hopes to modernize Germany, combat climate change, and tackle the coronavirus pandemic. Lawmakers voted 395 to 303 with six abstentions to elect Scholz today. Scholz heads a coalition of three parties, which are portraying the combination of former rivals as a progressive alliance that includes the Progressive Greens and Libertarian Free Democrats. Russian President Vladimir Putin and U.S. President Joe Biden have agreed to appoint envoys to continue talks in light of escalating tensions involving Russia massing tens of thousands of troops near its border with Ukraine. The Kremlin said today it was unclear when the talks would happen, but the two leaders intended for them to take place rather promptly. Biden and Putin spoke for over 2 hours on Tuesday. Biden warned Putin not to invade Ukraine. Christopher Martinez has more.
Biden plans to speak with Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky. Meanwhile, eyes will be on Putin to see what happens next. Jen Psaki is the White House press secretary.
What they agreed to at the end of the call, that there would be close coordination and discussion at the level of senior national security staff, that's the next natural step here. It's really up to President Putin to determine what the path forward will look like.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Federal prosecutors grilled former Theranos CEO Elizabeth Holmes for 5 hours in a San Jose court on Tuesday. They're trying to prove criminal allegations that she misled investors, customers, and patients about a flawed blood testing technology that she spent years touting as a medical breakthrough. Holmes has pleaded not guilty to charges of defrauding investors and patients by misleading them about the progress Theranos was making on a technology that was supposed to be able to detect a wide range of diseases and other problems by testing just a few drops of blood. I'm Max Pringle. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, and those were our news headlines. Now, we kick off our Sojourner Truth special on a new indigenous film entitled The Condor and the Eagle. During today's program, you will hear presentations and commentary by Casey Camp Horanick and Tom Goldtooth. Casey is one of the protagonists in the film The Condor and the Eagle. She is the hereditary drum keeper of the Women's Scout Dance Society of the Ponca Nation of Oklahoma. Tom Goldtooth is the executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Let's hear from them now.
My name is Leanna Lopez. I want to thank you very much for everyone joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed the film as much as we enjoyed making it. And just so you know, I'm in the film. You probably saw me a couple of times. I am a multimedia communications professional based in Houston, Texas. And I do all media, print media, and digital media. And most of my work is focused on educational, environmental, and social justice projects along the Gulf South for all five Gulf Coast states, the Amazon rainforest, the Northern Americas, Central America, and Europe. And we are joining tonight. IEN is hosting this film and panel discussion, and we're talking about the indigenous values and how those are reflected in colonial law, which at the time they are not. So there's a project, The Rights of Nature, or Rights of Mother Nature, that Casey Camp is deeply involved with, which we will be talking a little bit about as well. Tonight's screening will be supporting IEN's work, Indigenous Environmental Network, the Film Impact Campaign, which is part of this whole series of screenings. And also, it's the other folks that we're supporting tonight are two indigenous communities in Nicaragua who were hit by two of the strongest storms out of the 2020 hurricane season, which were Iota and Etta. We ran out of names, so I decided to start using the Greek language. And so tonight, for our talk about the rights of Mother Nature and Mother Earth, we are joined by Casey Camp Horanick, who is one of the film protagonists. She will be opening us with a prayer in just a minute. But she is a hereditary drum keeper of the Women's Scout Dance Society of the Ponca Nation of Oklahoma. Because of her work there, the Ponca Nation was the first tribe in the state of Oklahoma to adopt the Rights of Nature statute and passing a moratorium on fracking on tribal lands. And if you don't know Tom Goldtooth, which, you know, he's been a leader of IEN for quite some time, since the 1980s, he's been involved with environmental related issues and programs working within tribal governments in developing indigenous based environmental protection infrastructures And he works obviously worldwide on policy advising to indigenous communities and other communities on environmental protection, and more recently on climate policy, focusing on mitigation, adaptation, and concerns of false solutions. And then I am going to now turn this over to Casey Kerr to start us off with a prayer.
It's good to be here with everyone tonight, and I want to acknowledge my relatives, my younger relatives, my relative Tom Goldtooth, my relative Chief Ninawa, and of course Liana and our interpreter Colin, and ask you to overlook me speaking in front of you and to add your energy to the prayers that we might offer tonight to gather us together. Now, burn a little bit of cedar and sage here to try to make things right and invite this sacred fire to be part of our prayer. And also our relative, the water, and Jinga. I think we say it the same way in our languages, relative Tom, but portions of Mother Earth that are here at this time. Want to remind all of you that are here with us today that witnessed this film that the things that you saw are the lives that we carry and live in all the time, and that together somehow the great mystery has given us the ability to join our voices and our thoughts and our spirits into one understanding through our original ways that honor our Mother the Earth, our Father the Sky, through the winds, through the wings, through the forelegs, through the fins, through the water herself, our Father Sun, our Mother Moon, the sacred star nation. So with that in mind, I want to also remind you that each of you could be anywhere doing anything this evening, and yet for some reason we're drawn together, and that's an important sign that we're meant to be together, that we're meant to share this little short period of time together and to put our energies towards the healing of ourselves, and in doing so the healing that we owe this debt of deep gratitude to our Mother Earth and Father Sky to give back to them. Wakanda Khube, Majan Khube, Weeblaha Ehe, Weeblaha Mi Miamba Mikae, Weeblaha Ni Huhu Khida Dachte Majan. Great Mystery, Earth Mother. I want to say thank you, and I say thank you. Thank you for the sacred moon, the Father Sun, the winds that blow, the deer and the other four legs, they, the buffalo, the sacred water that it comes from the milk of our Mother Earth, that she nurtures us with, for the finned ones that live within her, for all of those that we don't have names for, but we know as our relative in whatever form they may be in this universal gathering of life that the great mystery put into motion before we came here in this flesh, in this robe that we wear over our spirit. We ask that you join us in this thing called webinar. That is another portion of the web of life that connects us. Show us a way forward. Help us honor the ancestors that came before us and set a path in front of us. Let us be the path maker now and set a place for our youth and our unborns, that they may have what is necessary to have life. Bless all those that are sickly, all those that are in mourning, all those caretakers, and on and on and on. We're grateful for this moment to come together, and we say thank you. God, our thoughts, our words, our intentions, and if there's something forgotten, I ask you to take that from the middle of my spirit and offer it in the best way possible. Sha. We bow.
Thank you for that, Casey. I always love when you open prayers like that, with our panels and prayers like that. They're so calming, especially after the information that you've taken in from this film. Hello, Tom. How are you? Thank you so much for joining us. It's always nice to see you in person, kind of virtual reality here. Can you tell us, you know, it's been a long time since I've been able to catch up with you as well. And I know that there's been some changes and some serious things happening at the, you know, international level. Can you give us fill us in a little bit on some of your most prominent projects at the moment?
Sure. It's good to see you again. And it's really good to see my relatives, Casey Camp and Chief Ninawa. And to everyone that's listening, the Bethlehem in Ashland, well, the Kota Basha Shichin. A happy day. Chente Weshteya, Napeche Yuzapado. The Kota Chaze, Makupi, Matho Awayakapi, Mie. I spoke to my relatives, the Grizzly Bear Nation, and it's always good to hear my younger brother, Ninawat, speak, because it triggers in me the original instructions that we've been given by our elders, by our people. And when I took this position with the Indigenous Environmental Network in 1991, some of the older ones that I related to, work with, and they were worried. They said, don't forget your teachings, because you're going to go out into that world. And I really felt good with this circle of elders and women's societies, and there were youth in this formation of this confederacy, this alliance, a network of indigenous peoples to pray with and talk about Mother Earth. And I really felt good about that, because the foundation had a spiritual foundation. As I got more involved with two worlds, the white man world of federalism, they have their own laws. They have environmental protection laws and standards, environmental health laws. And I started to focus on that to get a better understanding on their legal system, how I already have an understanding on how the white man thinks. But as far as the legal system, where they say they're protecting the environment, I talked to people about that. And one of my grandfathers said, you know, when you talk about the environment, it's spiritual. You know, they don't understand that. They forgot that. But it's spiritual. When we talk about the air, we talk about the water, we talk about pollution prevention. Even when these federal agencies are evaluating the impacts, the effect of some kind of development, is that spiritual work. That takes us who understand our indigenous thinking into that, not only the cultural and spiritual values that are important to ask and to assess, on the development of a pipeline crossing the sacredness of a river, Minnishoshe, the Missouri River, for an example. It kicks into gear that two world, that duality of thinking, that we exist in this modern world as indigenous thinkers, indigenous peoples that are continuing to lift up our traditional indigenous knowledge. But also it brings in the issues of our rights, our inherent rights as indigenous peoples. So that's that duality that we have to face. So right now, we have people on the front line right now here where I live in northern Minnesota. Line 3, the corporation is Enbridge. There's been our local communities of the Anishinaabe peoples. They've been fighting all along in the long process of decision-making that the Minnesota state and United States government, since this is a Canadian-U.S. boundary, transboundary decision, okay, it has to involve treaty rights. But in this long process, the decision makers of the colonists, they don't want to recognize the indigenous treaty rights. They don't want to recognize the inherent rights of the Anishinaabe people who live here. So right now, there's some people here that are camped out because the construction has started to dig into Mother Earth. They got the pipes laying there like a snake. They got contractors. Most of them are men. They're not indigenous white men. I don't know anything about them. Some of them bring the same confusion that they have in their families. There's high rates of abuse, domestic abuse, rape, sexual abuse that these contractors bring with them. I saw that same thing happening in the mining industry in Brazil. As the miners come in, the indigenous women are raped. They're beat up. I see that happening in all my travels. You mentioned my world travels. I haven't traveled, though, since mid-March. I've been homebound. But I'm just as busy. We got these Zoom meetings. And it's helped because it allows us to reevaluate how do we keep our communication with our indigenous peoples. Because that snake that's out there, that Western forms of development, knows that this is their opportunity to try to keep going and putting these pipelines, oil development, mining development, extractive industries, but also that's extractive economy. Capitalism thrives on what I'm talking about. So what are we confronting? That's part of it. But also some of our peoples are being strategic with this new president coming in. What is it that we need to take advantage of? What is this an opportunity for executive actions to do what? So we are engaged with people on the front line, a network of grassroots people throughout Turtle Island, all the way from Alaska to Florida, to Texas, Phoenix, Southern California, all these areas. What is it that we want to push up? The right to free and prior FPIC, free, prior, and informed consent is something that we are lifting up. We're hoping that this president will sign an executive order to make it mandatory on all the federal agencies who are involved with federal action and decision making with our American Indians and Alaska Natives in our communities, that they be engaged with implementing and recognizing the provisions and the standards of free, prior, and informed consent. The consent is their right to say no under self-determination. So this discussion on the rights of nature is very important, like my brother Ninawa talked about. Because part of what we have seen, including my sister, Casey Kemp, from the local level to the state level to the national level, but we've been lucky to go into the international community, the United Nations. And one of those initiatives is the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, Conference of the parties of the nation states of the world coming together. The Paris Treaty Agreement that they made in 2015. You know, we call that one of my people I work with, Alberto Saldamando, who is an experienced and knowledgeable human rights attorney. He was one of the drafters of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Coming out of Paris in 2015, he said, this Paris Accord is nothing but a treaty agreement. And as you look into it, it's full of false solutions, of carbon market, carbon pricing scenarios. And there's even confusion in this country with a lot of the environmental organizations. They don't understand that these carbon market solutions that they're talking about, cap and trade, carbon offsets, carbon tax, carbon dividends, polluter pay mechanism, does not cut pollution at source. It's a greenwash. Chevron and these corporations buy themselves out of it. They're not cutting emissions, they're expanding, like in Richmond, California. It affects my brothers for the Sariaku. This film, this movie went into Ecuador. They are facing deforestation. They are facing all these issues we're talking about. And what has come in there is these big, large NGOs, environmental groups, the World Bank, and they're promising big money. Just give us your trees. What? Give us your trees, yes. We're going to utilize the carbon in the trees. We're going to protect your trees that way. And we told them years ago, you know where the money is coming from. It's not coming from the World Bank. It's coming from the polluters. They're buying themselves out of cutting back emissions. Carbon trading. Anytime you engage in any kind of commodity in the trading system of the world, Wall Street, anywhere, you got to determine whose property right that is. It's a property right issue. Before you trade air, carbon, before you trade methane, greenhouse gases in their system, you got to determine who owns that. So it's a commodification, privatization issue, and that's happening throughout the world with biodiversity, conservation. Mining companies are buying themselves out of taking responsibility in mining, raping Mother Earth. They're not taking responsibility in many of these areas that we're talking about. But now they're starting to use conservation offsets to offset the destruction they do in one area, Mother Earth, in another area. They say, we restored the Earth. So they offset their destructive activities. So they look good in an ad in National Geographic. They said they have offset the damage they have done. But this is a form, again, of disrespect of our Unchimakam, Mother Earth. It's a disrespect to life. It's a disrespect to the air, to nature. This is why we joined the Global Alliance on Rights of Nature. Casey has been to many of the meetings that we've had, our tribunals, to where we have tribunals to hold these perpetrators of the Universal Declaration on the Rights of Mother Earth. We hold the perpetrators guilty, an act of crime against Mother Earth. So it's very important, this discussion, because in the movie, the foundation of the mentality of an extractive economy, an extractive industry, and the governments and the financial mechanisms like the World Bank, they're all part of this. It's a part of dominion of the sacredness of Mother Earth that they brought with them. The dominion over our women that was hundreds of years ago they came, and the dominion over the creative female principle of the natural laws of Mother Earth and Father Sky. This is indigenous knowledge. This is why this is important to talk about. So development of the earth jurisprudence, the development of earth laws, the development that where you in New Zealand, they recognized the personality, the rights of the personality of the Whanganui River. These are important steps in the movement. But it puts a challenge to us as well, is to work with that, because this is a door opener that we can continue to lift up our rights, because we are still fighting in these countries and these governments in Oklahoma, in Minnesota, in North Dakota, South Dakota, for laws that recognize the rights of our personality as well as indigenous peoples, our inherent relationship. This is a relationship issue. So maybe as this movement grows on recognizing the rights and the personality of the water, of the river, our hope and our prayer is that the dominant society will say, along with that, there's no separation between the rights of Mother Earth and the rights of indigenous peoples. It's one and the same. We cannot separate it. So that's some of the challenges that we are working on. How do we assert our rights, our laws as indigenous peoples in this movement on the rights of nature, the rights of Mother Earth, that the colonial governments will recognize? So that's what I wanted to kind of lift up on where we're at right now. And we have to continue to fight an extractive economy, a system. We've got to work to keep fossil fuels in the ground. That's very important. No fault solutions like technologies, geoengineering, where they want to capture the pollution that the industry is creating and capture it, and then they're going to use like a straw and blow it back into Mother Earth to capture it and to sequester it into the earth. Who gave these people, the industry and the governments and the financiers, permission to do that? Did they consult with Casey Camp and her people, Chief Ninawa? Did they consult with us to have ceremony to see if that is permission was given to us by Mother Earth? The companies keep going. Fracking issues, I'm sure my sister's going to talk about that. So it's really critical, this movie. It's critical we have this discussion, because it's just now opening the door to this illusions and where we're at right now with the virus and with Mother Earth. Mother Earth is speaking up. Something has to change. We're watching the volcanoes throughout the world. We're watching that right now because they talk to each other. So all these things we are watching. Thank you.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We're going to take a quick station break. When we return, we will continue our special on a new Indigenous film entitled The Condor and the Eagle. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
All we want to do is take the chains off. All we want to do is break the chains off, man. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is take the chains off. All we want to do is break the chains off, man. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is be free. Can you tell me why? Every time I step outside, I see my dad. I'm letting you know that it ain't no gun they make that can kill my soul. Oh no.
Welcome back to Sojourner Truth. Check us out on our website at So True Radio. If you're on Facebook, you can look for us and like us there. Our handle on Instagram and Twitter at So True Radio. We're also on SoundCloud. You can go to the search bar and type in Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott to find us. And today we'd like to give a shout out to Indigenous nations throughout the Americas. So that will cover here in the United States and also internationally. Now, we return to our special on a new Indigenous film entitled The Condor and the Eagle. During the second half of today's program, you will hear more presentations and commentary by Casey Camp Horanick and Tom Goldtooth. Casey is one of the protagonists in the film, The Condor and the Eagle. She is the hereditary drum keeper of the Women's Scout Dance Society of the Ponca Nation of Oklahoma. Tom Goldtooth is the executive director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Let's hear more from them now.
I love these conversations after the panels because they're always very different and they cover so much. There's so much to cover in an hour, all the things that have to be said. But I do want to just point out one thing just because of some of the comments that we've been getting on Facebook and some of the things that were mentioned in our comments here. One of the things that I found, and this is to your point about being separate from the earth, when I started getting involved in the environmental work, I could not believe, and I'm not going to name the NGO, but it was a big NGO that you hear almost every day. When I started working with them here in Houston, because I found out, you know, about other things, other places first, and then I started realizing what was happening here in Houston after I met Brian and his father. But when I started with this environmental group, and I was talking about the fracking and all of the pollution, they literally, I was the most talented one with their social media at the time. And so they literally like, well, we need to start a whole other group to talk about pollution and all this other stuff, because we only talk about going out and enjoying nature. Like, these are also part of the folks, I'm not saying it's the same group, but I was amazed. They wanted to save the forest by taking tribes like Chief Ninawa's tribe out of the forest to save the forest. It took me a really long time to understand even how people could think like that. So I think we have a lot of work here to do. And with that in mind, Casey, one of the things that you did, your tribe, your clan, was one of the first folks in the state of Oklahoma, of all places, to adopt the rights of nature statute. Can you tell us, you know, what kind of experience with that, and what kind of, I'm going to assume, since in Oklahoma, what kind of, response you've gotten, whether it be, you know, I guess from the folks that live around you that are not Indigenous.
Thank you. And thank you to Chief Ninawa and to my younger brother for their wise words. Spiritually, Chief Ninawa has an understanding that always speaks directly to my heart and spirit, and the same with my younger brother in his relationship to the Great Spirit and interpreting that into the Western civilization thoughts and how they do that. And it brings up many, many, many thoughts when I listen to them. One is simply a manner in which we interpret the language that we're speaking right now. We're talking the colonial language, and we're expecting them to understand it from a spiritual viewpoint. So we begin to assess that as Indigenous peoples and as activists and as women. And one of the things that stands out to me is when I hear natural resources. That's not even a practical understanding of what we're talking about. Take off that RE there. We're talking about sources of life. In our understanding of the natural world, in our understanding of the natural laws, sources. And so we have to begin to take their language as well and have it reflect the understandings that we're coming from. And I think that that that's one of the gifts that these two have offered us tonight, is an understanding of how we can utilize the colonial words and mindset and adjust them to an indigenous understanding of how to realign their laws with the natural laws that we try to follow. And I remember hearing something that struck me deeply, because of course, as a woman, I have grown children within my womb. I have been blessed to have 4 children, 2 men and 2 women, that teach me every day. And they came through the waters that lived within me. And they came from the corn that I ate. They came from the rooted nation that I ate. They came from the forelegs and the wings that I ate. And their cells were built. And when they were born onto this earth, they went that way, and their breath became one with the winds that come from all directions. And the warmth that they have is the warmth of those volcanoes and of the Father Sun. And they became part of the rhythms of the Moon Mother that brought them forth from me, that was controlling me, that I was in tune with. So I understand the sacredness of life is about us recognizing that we are part of nature. We're not here as protectors of nature. We are nature protecting itself. And it's so vital that we come from everything with that. So when it became a time that I was on the governing body of the Ponca Nation of Oklahoma, it was easy to help to put those into words. You know, our attorney, Jason Amott, our business committee, and our people, many community gatherings with movement rights, Tom came down. And we talked about this many times prior to that. How do we recognize what the natural laws are? And how do we find and assess a manner to create tools that will give the colonist an understanding that our laws, the natural laws, are the ones that are going to sustain us? So by recognizing the rights of nature within the Ponca jurisdiction and our traditional jurisdiction, we feel as if, and we've not stopped yet, there's more to come, we feel as if we have set ourselves in a position that when our sacred water is being affected, we live between Nijide and Niska, the Red River, and it's called Salt Fork, and Arkansas, that as the polluters affect those, then we can have guardians, as Chief Ninawa spoke of, not just guardians of nature, which is nature itself, but to have appointed human guardians that speak this language, that have legalese, and they can interpret into the courts, the Ponca courts, not the federal, not the state, but the Ponca courts, if they violate the rights of nature. Because again, we are nature, and we're trying to protect ourselves through that way. We're talking about free, prior, and informed consent. And recently, when Governor Stitt of Oklahoma attacked our sovereignty through getting the EPA to rule on behalf of the state of Oklahoma to have jurisdiction over the Environmental Protection Act here, rather than the 39 tribes that are represented, we're legally one step ahead right now, because we have this statute in place. But at the same time, we're going to challenge them in their state and federal courts, because when we said no, when our environmental office said no, and we said we do not give consent, you failed to get consent, they said, okay, we're going to count that as consultation. and they went ahead and passed that law anyway. And that happened to all of the nations here. The same thing with the fracking. Even though we have a moratorium on fracking within our jurisdiction, all around us, they're still doing the same thing. They're doing what my relative Tom said. You know, they're hurting the water so bad. They're taking the fresh water and they're putting these vile things in there, and they're pulling up the breaking down the shale rock, the very bones of our Mother Earth, and they're causing that to drip out and pull it back up, and then they inject this water back down into the earth. And who did give them permission? Certainly not us, but the state of Oklahoma, in anticipation of this fracking boom that Harold Hamm has pushed, and he's from Oklahoma, a multi-billionaire in the extractive industry, they passed a law here in Oklahoma that forbids the municipalities from putting a moratorium on fracking. But as indigenous people, we still have our treaty rights, whether they're honored or not. And I believe that we must exercise those now. It is critical. It is necessary. We don't have the time to wait until a process happens. So we passed a moratorium on fracking. But everyone has to uphold the rights of indigenous people now, because you're our neighbors, because you breathe the same air, because the Mother Earth sustains you in the same manner, because the Moon Mother moves the waters through you as well as through all other things, because the Father Son beams down on you, and because all of those things are part of the natural laws and the sacred system of life that was put in place by the great mystery. And now human beings have misbehaved so badly that only by falling in line with what is true, what is natural, what is real, and realigning ourselves with the sacred, can we trust there will be a place for our future generations.
It's so scary sometimes, and I say scary in the best possible way because I love these conversations, but we only usually get about an hour, and there's just so much to cover, so much. So I'm going to, you know, just in the process of wrapping up, we're going to go for the last question here, and I'll let you have your choice, because this one question always comes up when we are talking, when we have these panels. But what I want to say is, and Tom, I'm going to come to you first. During the discussion, we have covered quite a bit of a lot of information. Is there anything, as we wrap it up here, that you would like to mention and talk about and to say that we have not said yet in this particular discussion about the rights of nature? Or if you want to tell someone how they can help, you know, where they can help, Tom, I'm going to allow you to take the first shot at this one.
Sure. I think I'll start out with where people can get more information is we have a couple organizations that Casey and me are affiliated with. One is Movement Rights. It has a website, our Indigenous Environmental Network. We're redoing our webpage, but we're going to have a really dynamite page on this issue. And then the Global Alliance on Rights of Nature. But one thing that I want to talk about is some of us, a small circle of indigenous thinkers, we're concerned that this movement, even though it's part of prophecy on and on the right path, that it doesn't become a form of extinguishment, that it not become a form of termination and genocide, however it's unintentional. This is very critical. The rights of nature in the context that we're talking about, and it's existing within a non-indigenous context through, you know, the human connection. As indigenous people, we're lifting up that connection of importance is the inherent relationships that exist with indigenous peoples, our lands, the sky, waters, the spiritual teachings that we talked about. and lifting up the importance of inherent relationship jurisprudence. So along with this evolving jurisprudence that has various names that we talked about, rights of nature, rights of Mother Earth, earth law, wild law, earth jurisprudence, all of these type of thinkings draw ideas and inspiration from us as indigenous peoples, and many are important. You know, many of these are very important allies to our movement as indigenous peoples, and many of our indigenous peoples embrace that. So the common theme is that they're framed around a notion of rights, and that they are all existing within a non-indigenous framework of law and society. So that's what I wanted to throw that out there, so it doesn't become just a Eurocentric approach, but also, but important is an approach that recognizes the importance of indigenous people's framework. And we already have the mechanisms for that in this country, and where Ninawa lives, is that we already have the practice of our traditional knowledge. We already have the elements of our own inherent relationship jurisprudence, our indigenous legal and political articulation that involves customary rights. So this is what we're entertaining within our network of indigenous peoples, IEN, and it's gonna involve a lot of more discussion. But it is part of prophecy that the dominant world is going to come back full circle to learning what its relationship is to the sacredness of Mother Earth. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, thank you, Tom, for joining us tonight. This was a really good panel that I was expecting to, that I was really happy to be part of. And it's always glad to get to see your face.
We are out of time. I'd like to thank all of the speakers featured in today's program, as well as the Indigenous Environmental Network, for allowing us to share their audio with you. I would also like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, Romero Funes, our assistant producer, and today's audio engineer. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can contact the Pacific Arania Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Remember to visit our website, soultrueradio.org, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Our handle is @SoTrueRadio. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott, and y'all, please stay safe. Thank you.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934.